This is the Public Record Podcast. I'm managing editor Ken Allen. My very special guest is the distinguished economist Dr. Christopher Thornburg, founder of Beacon Economics. We recorded this interview at his office in Los Angeles. This is the second of a two-part podcast. On this episode, we'll discuss transportation.
Give me the overview of our current transportation system situation here in California and maybe nationwide. Quick summary.
Let me see. What's our transportation system like? It's not as good as Europe's. It's not as good as Japan's. But it works okay.
I don't think we have any new freeways on the books, do we?
No, not too many. But then again, given the lack of population growth, do we really need them?
I don't know. It was noon when I came in here today, and it was already gridlock.
Gridlock is a strong word. Yet again, traffic has been part of the city framework since cities began. Let me go back to ancient Rome and hear about the complaints about two things. A, traffic. B, the rents. This is part of being in a dense urban framework. Now, we could certainly do better. Take, for example, light rail.
Okay.
And that's the new big thing, right? We're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on light rail in the city.
We once had that here.
We once had it. At one point in time.
Yeah.
One point in time, we had the largest trolley system in the country.
Yeah.
Interesting fact on that. Did you know that most of those trolley lines went bankrupt?
I knew they were struggling.
They were struggling. Yeah. Turns out it wasn't the evil car manufacturers.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. They were happy to dismantle the trolleys as they went bankrupt. But let's be clear, they went bankrupt on their own.
Right, yeah.
Public transport is not an easy of a thing as people think it is. People would prefer to not take public transport if they have an option.
Let me correct you on that.
Yeah.
People always want to have public transportation for somebody else.
For somebody else.
Please put in a transit system for trains, buses, so that they get them off the freeway so I can drive without being hindered.
Exactly.
That's what they want.
So we're sinking billions of dollars into our system. And here's the other thing about train systems. They need to be complete to be even potentially cost efficient. And ours isn't anywhere near to complete, right? It's kind of this hodgepodge mess, and they're still trying to figure this and that out. It's going to be years and years before they get anywhere close to it. And the thing that's most dispiriting about this is how the city is happy to invest in this, but they're not willing to make any of the changes necessary to make this thing actually even reasonably efficient. I only say reasonably because it's never going to be completely off subsidies, but, you know, maybe.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, if you want to get it from point A to point B, and you need to take a Metrolink, and then you need to take some sort of a trolley car or a bus, and you have to make three connections, there is no place you can go, I'll give you one exception, to complete that trip in one pass.
Yeah.
Now, you can go to Google in the current moment and see what the routing is. But you can't plan a trip ahead because nobody has this data.
Yeah.
All these little fiefdoms work separately without any coordination. So you arrive at one place and it's an hour and a half for the bus that will take you the last 10 minutes, but it's too far to walk.
Yeah. And there's two things here. The other issue here, of course, is twofold. First of all, most households, particularly here in Southern California, already have cars. And when you have to suddenly have to have three different things.
Yeah, you're already paying for a car and insurance and whatever else, maintenance.
You're not
going to pay another $100, $200 a month for a train ticket or pass.
So there's only two ways of getting people on that train system. One way is to make driving a car so expensive that they'll do it.
We're getting there.
Not really. Not compared to, like, you look at, like, Singapore or London. I mean, you know, the cost of a car in those places is through the roof because, again, they have to limit the supply because the traffic is really horrendous there.
Well, you know, here in the state, I think it was 2 years ago, 2022, maybe it was a few years ago, they did a study, I forget which agency it was, to put tolls like they do on the the toll freeway in Orange County.
Oh, sure,
and
sure.
The bridges.
Yeah, yeah. Like in downtown.
That,
yeah.
That same, yeah. Whatever that's called.
Yeah, that they do that in these very dense parts of congestion.
They want to do that at all times on the freeway and charge you every time you get on the freeway.
They do that in Australia. It's a wonderful system.
Yeah.
I completely encourage it. We should pay every time we get on the freeway. There's no reason not to. Freeways are not free. Someone has to build and maintain those. Ergo, if you're using them, you should pay for that. It's a completely reasonable thing to say and to do. And we have the technology to do it. But again, the political situation will never allow that.
So during the pandemic, I want to take another thought while you're on that note there. During the pandemic, we were all working at home.
Yeah.
And everybody seemed to like it. But now employers want you back in the office. Now, first of all, why would an employer pass up the opportunity to save 20% of their profits, you know, which can go right into the bottom line, to have a fancy, expensive office?
The reason you want them in the office is because productivity is lousy when they're not in the office. You can't run a company when people are remote. I mean, maybe there are some companies where you can monitor them through some sort of third-party spy software, and maybe the task is so rote that they can do it from home. There's a whole thing called collaboration costs, which is the idea that you need to be in the office, you need to be working with people, that the eye-to-eye contact, the working next to somebody, is a far more productivity-enhancing way of working than everybody sitting at home with a pair of earphones staring at a tiny little screen. And it's not just collaboration, it's not just productivity, it's bonding, it's loyalty, it's teamwork, it's being able to see your employee over the water cooler and know whether they're happy or pissed off, which is something every manager needs to know.
Yeah.
So it's not all that easy. But going back to public transport for just for a second, you know, we diverged on this other stuff, which is interesting. But again, my frustration with light rail here in L.A. or in California in general, we like all this light rail. But you know how you make light rail actually efficient is by connecting dense job centers.
Absolutely.
With dense job home centers.
Why don't we do that?
We don't. We don't allow density.
But why not?
Ask Scott Wiener. Scott Wiener multiple times put forward laws in the state of California that would say around any transit hub, the state will automatically rezone to allow intense densification.
Makes perfect sense to me.
And yet it gets shot down. Every time he hasn't gotten it through.
And who's the special interest shooting it down?
Well, in this case, it's everybody else in the assembly.
Yeah, but who's really behind this curtain here?
You and me. It's because, look, Californians
are... Are we afraid they'll take our cars away? Is that where we're going?
You will take my car
over
from
my
cold,
exactly.
Dead hand.
Yeah. The keys out of my hand, exactly.
Yeah, no.
I'm only being partly facetious.
No, I got it. No, it's not that. It's they don't like density. Californians have this weird idea we're already a dense place, which is my wife's Japanese, and we go to Japan every year, and she lives in the suburbs. She actually doesn't like density, but we went to Osaka this last year. Osaka, by the way, is the small, it's the second city there. Mm-hmm. It's the second one. It's a smaller city. It's nowhere near Tokyo. It's only 19 million people.
Village.
Yeah, just a village.
Yeah.
19 million people. And you go to Osaka, and it's, I don't know, it's roughly the size, I'm going to say, of maybe Glendale and Burbank put together.
Yeah.
And there's 19 million people living there.
Yeah.
And anybody who says we have a dense environment here, it just makes my head want to explode. We're nowhere near at capacity, except for whatever reason, we are trying to maintain a suburban lifestyle inside a dense urban zone. We need to stop that. We need to densify, particularly densify around these transit zones. If you have a train stop, a subway stop, and it's surrounded by single-family homes with driveways where you park your car, it's going to use that train stop.
Well, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. This is the problem with so many things. Like Metrolink up the San Bernardino corridor, it stops in Rancho Cucamonga, about 30-minute walk to Victoria Gardens, major shopping center. Can't get there from here. It would cost you $30 to take Uber for that little five-minute thing. And it's now compare that to Claremont, which is a destination. They have a farmer's market there. Their downtown is right there. And there are a couple other stops like that. Oh, the best one, of course, is San Juan Capistrano, which is marvelous. But those are the exceptions rather than the rule. Up in the Bay Area, you know, to save money, they built BART right down the middle of the freeways. Who wants to go to the middle of a freeway?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. And yet again, the Bay Area will not densify around BART stations.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some places where it's dense just on because it's in the city already.
Yeah.
But again, they won't. They pull it out to the suburbs, and those suburbs will fight tooth and nail before you allow an apartment building getting built. Folks, you can't do this. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Well,
you've got to start making a choice.
Now, for our listeners in the desert, which is our primary audience, they're looking at bringing some sort of train. I don't know what it's going to be. It's probably going to be Amtrak, to the desert. Now, in my mind, there's a no-brainer train stop. These two tracks, the Union Pacific tracks, the north and south, run right by a major casino. I'm not going to name the casino, but right by a major casino.
Right.
It is within walking distance of their parking lot. Right. It would be no big deal to build a train station there where people get out of the train station and are in the resort hotel. They would never have to leave the property. They've got everything they need there. So people from L.A., many people don't drive. Another casino up the freeway buses people in all the time. That would be a no-brainer to me. But they'd have to have frequent service. But right now they have a train station in Palm Springs that's out in the middle of nowhere. It's like a bus stop.
Right.
Out in the middle of the sand dunes, right next to a road that is closed two or three times a year for flooding or blowing sand. And there's no phone, no bathroom. Now you can see some fast food on the other side of the tracks, but you can't get over the tracks because the bridge is only big enough for cars with no sidewalks, and it's a fence along the thing. So you could starve to death while you're looking at the jack-in-the-box across the fence. This is the way we build public transit.
Well, that's because California seems way more interested in virtue signaling than actually accomplishing things.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous place to be. It's just, you know, it's all about, well, look what I did. Well, it didn't work, but I did it.
Yeah, but at some point the newspapers say, yeah, but, you know, your fare box collection's only 17%. It's costing you a fortune to run this thing. If they would make it successful, it might be, you know, almost self-supporting,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's logical. But again, common sense and extremism don't go hand in hand.
The Public Record Podcast will continue in a moment.
Multimedia dominates business communications today. 83% of consumers prefer multimedia information over printed text. YouTube demos and product reviews, tutorials, documentaries, explainers and new business presentations, TV and radio commercials, infomercials, live event announcements, kiosk and exhibit narrations, telephone voice prompts, and so much more. But don't choose just any voice to represent your brand. Ken Allen Voices offers a team of veteran male and female broadcast talent who can deliver that professional network television sound that makes your message stand out from the clutter. Ken Allen Voices can also turn your messaging ideas into a finished script, optimized for spoken performance. Ken Allen Voice's state-of-the-art recording studio can also clean up many noisy video dialogue tracks with specialized software that works like Photoshop for audio. Visit KenAllenVoices.com.
We're back with Dr. Christopher Thornburg and our discussion on the economics of transportation.
How far are we from automated cars? We have Waymos driving around the city with nobody in them. They're testing. Are we 5 years out from self-driving cars?
I don't know. They just canceled their contract up in San Francisco.
They did because they had one accident, which, again, I mean, have you seen how human beings drive? The fact that the occasional robot car does something stupid, that's par for the course as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Compared to the lunatics who are on the street all the time driving out there with their cell phone in one hand and a joint in the other. You know, are we really kidding ourselves that God, the robot should be perfect despite the fact that we're not? It's preposterous. But putting all that to one side, whatever is happening right now, we know this is coming down the pike.
Talk to me about the airline industry.
Making money hand over fist right now, aren't they?
Are they?
Oh, sure. They came back in a big way. A pandemic hammered them. But, of course, when you look at what's going on now, there's an enormous demand for travel. The TSA employments, you know, the TSA throughputs, that's how we measure people going in and out of airports, record high level right now. The airplane fees are through the roof, despite the fact that oil prices are dropping. They're making money hand over fist for now. But, you know, this is, in economics, we look at the airline industry as one that is, it's very much a boom-bust industry. Because of all the fixed costs, you think about how all these massive, you know, $1 billion of planes they buy, you know, get four planes for $1 billion or something like that. It's huge capital costs. Mm-hmm. And so when things are good, they overexpand and things turn and they get hammered, right? So it's a boom-bust industry. A couple of years ago, they were busted. Right now, they're booming. And, you know, I think it'll be like this for a while, given the health of the American consumer.
What about all the safety problems they've had recently? Temporary, you know, problem?
I'm glad I wasn't on that Alaska Airlines flight, but aren't we all impressed that it landed and nobody got hurt?
Yeah, well, fortunately, nobody was sitting by that hole.
Yeah, fortunately, maybe one person could have been killed by it had they been sitting right there without their seatbelt on. But again, the airline industry has never been safer, at least from the point of view of the people flying the planes and landing the planes. We haven't had a major crash in the United States in how many years? Knock on wood.
That's true.
So I think they have a stellar record. The bigger problem in airplanes seems to be the airplane passengers. And, you know, that goes back to, I think, that this idea of this social narrative or broader picture of what's going on around us. Here we are in 2024. We're thinking towards this November election. I look at the data right now. Consumer spending is doing great. Unemployment's low. Job opportunities are plentiful. People are wages, real wages are going up, particularly for lower skilled folks. They're doing much better. Consumer debt levels are very low right now. They're not very high. Americans have never had it as good as they do right now. They've never had it as good. And that's just the numbers. When you throw into the fact that 20 years ago, people didn't have these smartphones, They didn't. These things came out in 2006. So we have never had a better quality of life than we have right now. We never have.
Are a lot of workers going to be displaced by automation, though?
No. There's not enough workers. That's the problem. We don't have enough workers. We need more AI. Unfortunately, it's not what they say it is. So it's a sham. It'll help. But it's not true intelligence, and it's not going to displace a bunch of people. I hope it makes up for some of the labor shortages we're dealing with because we desperately need it. But it's not that kind of disruptor. But here's a bigger issue. As good as we have it, we are so angry.
Why is that?
Consumer sentiment is down. I mean, people are angry. They get into fist fights with flight attendants, for God's sake. They drive like idiots. People are angry.
Is this a new world of entitlement?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, again, this goes back to narratives versus realities. We spent the last decade feeling sorry for ourselves for no reason. And when you feel sorry for yourself for no reason, you start to build unrealistic expectations of what the world's like. And I think that the fact that those unrealistic expectations aren't coming true maybe is what's making everybody so upset. You know, I saw a great poll the other day, and then they talked about how everybody on the left thinks the country is going hard to the right, and everybody on the right thinks the country is going hard to the left. Everybody's positive that the other side's winning, and they're angry. And
what happened to the middle?
Silent middle? Maybe there's fewer of us left. I couldn't tell you. I'm not angry. I love my life. I have a great life, and I appreciate it. But maybe because I have the context of history, I see something other people don't. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. What I do know is that for centuries, the things we taught our kids were very simple. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. The world isn't fair, but you do the best you can. You be loyal to the people around you, and they'll be loyal to you. And yet, what we've taught over the last few years seems to be completely contrary to that. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you weaker. God forbid you should have to work an extra hour. And don't ever hear a dirty word, because you'll be stressed for weeks, right? Always trust your feelings. Never trust your feelings, people. The world is all about black and white, good and evil, bad and good. No, it's not. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a side.
They must be having a sale at the hospital.
Speaking of angry people, that's the third cop I saw running
on the road. Oh, is that the cops? I thought they were ambulances.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. No, it's cops, multiple ones.
Let me ask you this sort of interesting philosophical question.
I love philosophical questions.
Is what's behind this anger a mass case of low self-esteem? And by that I mean...
Americans do not have a problem with self-esteem. You've got to be kidding me.
Well, follow me on my logic here. If the only way to make yourself happy is to bring someone else down.
No, I don't think it's that. I think that when you start to recognize the psychological aspects and you look deeper at history, you will see that this happens. There the ebbs and flows. People get angry. They get upset about things maybe they shouldn't be. And that has direct consequences. It has consequences for the world. It has consequences for the economy. It's not unique to today. It is a longer run situation. And I think we all need to pay attention to it, because if you recognize what's going on, you're better able to deal with it. I mean, look, this is kind of the anger you saw in 1932 Germany. We know where that went. Right? By the way, it's also the anger that kicked off the U.S. Revolution.
Economist Dr. Christopher Thornburg, founder of Beacon Economics. The Public Record Podcast is a public service of the Public Record, the Coachella Valley's Business News Weekly. If you enjoyed this episode, I hope you'll share it with your friends and click the subscribe button with your favorite podcasting host. The Public Record Podcast is a production of Ken Allen Media. Visit KenAllenMedia.com.